on Talk Radio 98.5 and 1240 WRTA. It's The Buzz with Dr. Z, supported by the Lung Disease Foundation of Central Pennsylvania. Dr. Z is Dr. George Lupko, founder and director of the foundation. Now, here's WRTA's Doug Herentine and Dr. George Lupko.
Thanks for joining us. We appreciate it. And a reminder that we have a backlog of these programs available to you anytime as a podcast at WRTA.com. And Dr. Zlupko, I believe you have these on your site as well, correct?
I do. We do, yeah.
Yeah. So you can check out either of those. And by the way, on our podcast, we have links to Dr. Zlupko's sites, so you know what they are and you can find everything there. And also you can submit questions if you'd like him to discuss certain topics here. This one I'm not exactly familiar with, which I guess is the point of doing this particular show.
Well, actually, Doug, just take a minute to tell you why I decided on this particular topic. It's not the usual way I go about it. I was watching television. I hate to say that in the radio studio right now.
You're allowed.
But I was watching television, and, you know, there's a lot of commercials on patient-oriented commercials from pharmaceutical houses about different treatments and things like that. And there were about three in a row, and I realized that I had trouble figuring out what the diseases were that they were talking about. You know, the one that always gets me is this ATTR-CM. They have that on there, you know. And they have people who are smiling and happy now because they apparently have this terrible disease, but they're miraculously made better by whatever the drug is.
People in these commercials are some of the happiest people. They even sing and dance about the stuff now.
They really do. And so there was a bunch of these, and one of them happened to be on the topic we're going to talk about today, but they didn't even tell you about what the drug was. I happen to know what that is because we get marketed about these things. And I thought, well, why don't I just pick something off the TV that probably no one knows what it is. They watch it. It's being marketed to you.
Ask your doctor.
Yeah, but yeah, they want you to ask your doctor about it. So that's how I got today's topic. And today's topic is on something called bronchiectasis. And you were trying to pronounce it earlier. Let me hear you say it correct.
Bronchiectasis.
There you go. Okay. This is a lung disease. It's a disease of the airways. It's something that we see fairly commonly. And the reason the commercial is on television is because there's a new product out for it, obviously, right? The thing that I realized after I thought about it a little bit more was the reason they don't tell you about what the drug is because it's so complicated that it's easier to tell you about this disease, which is complicated enough, than the drug that's being used for it, okay? And so I'll talk about that later on when we talk about treatments and things like that. But so we're going to talk about bronchiectasis. And I guess the way to start is the way you always start is you try and tell everybody what this disease is. And this is a chronic inflammatory disease. And it's not surprising I use the word inflammatory. You ever notice that seems to be the basis of almost everything.
Yeah.
And there were some lectures I heard in the past kind of entitled Everything is Inflammation, you know. So there's inflammation in everything. It's how our—
Well, Dr. Merkin has made that point.
Well, it's how our body responds to whatever insult or injury is coming along.
Yeah.
So bronchiectasis, it's a chronic inflammatory disease, but the hallmark of it is it's a permanent bronchial dilatation. And you say, well, isn't that good? Don't we like to dilate our bronchial tubes, you know, in patients with asthma and things like that? Isn't it nice to have a dilated bronchial tube? No, this is something kind of different.
If it constricts the airwaves, I can't imagine it's...
Well, but it doesn't constrict the airwaves. It actually, well, it doesn't constrict them in the way you're thinking.
Okay.
Bronchiectasis is caused by an inflammation that attacks the wall of your airway. Now, your airways that we're talking about here, these airways, have a certain integrity, like kind of like a garden hose, if you will. You can squeeze the garden hose, and when you let go, it pops back to its usual round shape, okay? At least most of the garden hoses. There are some soft ones now that don't.
Yeah.
But I mean, the standard kind of garden hose that you had when you were a kid, you can squeeze it, But when you let it go, it comes back to its usual shape.
Right.
In patients with bronchiectasis, that tube, that airway, becomes damaged so that it doesn't do that. It becomes enlarged, becomes somewhat flabby. It's not like that nice.
It doesn't spring back.
It doesn't spring back. And the flabbiness that goes along with this and the enlargement of the airway leads to a whole host of other problems. We're going to talk about some of those today. So bronchiectasis is an anatomic disease, basically, of your airways, but it has some metabolic and immunologic causes and complications that can occur. And so but the commercial on television talks to you, it says bronchiectasis, you know, maybe your mother had it or something. I forget, you know, they show a picture of some guy there and some lungs and things like that. It's not enough for me, even as a physician and radio host here, to understand. So I can't imagine the average Joe really does. So I thought we'd talk about it today, and that's what we're going to talk about.
Well, one thing, based on what you've said so far, this is a permanent condition, so this is not a cure but a treatment.
That's correct. Yeah, the none of the treatments that we have, and we'll talk about them, and actually there aren't a great deal of them. There's some programs, some protocols that you can use. But nothing is going to cure this problem. We're trying to control it after the fact. The best thing you can do is perhaps prevent it from happening. But some of the things that cause it, you may not even know you have. And by the time it's doing its damage, it's too late, you know.
Yeah. Well, and by the way, we're not against the idea of new medications coming along for treatments or cures for some things if it's possible. It's just that if it's confusing, as the doctor said, to a professional, well, maybe it's time we explain it to the rest of us who are going to have I have no clue about this.
Well, good, because then you'll have some questions and I'll try and answer them. As I said, it's a permanent bronchial dilatation. And in the past, and I'm an old guy so I can remember the past, we had trouble diagnosing it. We would suspect it from symptoms. In its most severe cases, we could probably diagnose it on a regular chest x-ray. But the way things are done today, this is something that we diagnose at least by imaging on a CT scan of the chest, CAT scan of the chest, computerized axial tomography of the chest. But we do that, or we ask the patient to have that study done, because they're having certain symptoms, and we'll talk about that in just a minute. This disease process does affect a fair number of people in the United States, and we're finding out more and more have it because why? Because we're doing more CAT scans of the chest. We're doing those things to screen out for lung cancer. We're doing that for any type of, just about any complaint the patient has. I mean, you can't walk into any emergency room in the United States and not come out with a CAT scan of something, and usually it's your chest or your head.
If I could just have you take a slight detour here, there's an MRI, there's a CAT scan. Which is which, and what's the benefits and drawbacks of each?
Okay. The CAT scan, computerized axial tomography, it utilizes x-rays, okay? And so you're being exposed to what we refer to as ionizing radiation. It's like a chest x-ray. The amount that you get is more than just a chest x-ray. When you get a CT scan of the chest, even a low-dose one, you're getting several times the amount of radiation that you would get just by being out in the sun. A regular chest x-ray probably gives you the amount of radiation as a day in the sunshine. But a CT scan gives you multiples of that, maybe 10 times more. Now, that doesn't mean you shouldn't have a CAT scan done. It just means that the more of them you get, the more radiation you're exposed to, and that ionizing radiation has its effect. And so some of these programs where they're telling you to get CAT scans often, we usually don't want to make them that often because there's some issues with that. MRI, magnetic resonance imaging, does not use radiation. It uses magnetism, if you will. And it's a little more complicated, but it takes into effect something called the dipole moment of the water molecule. Okay, that's
sure easy for you to say.
Yeah, well, you asked, right?
Yeah.
And by switching on and off, let me put it this way, switching off on and off the magnetism, okay, you get a movement of the water molecule, and that can be detected, and an image can be produced from that. And so a magnetic resonance imaging study is usually designed to measure or look at things that are soft tissue related. We usually don't do those in the chest, okay? Those are things that we're doing mostly for the brain, for example. That's a very common place. We'll do them from the spine because we're looking, again, at the spinal column, the neural canal, things like that. So patients who have problems with their back and all will get MRIs because we're looking at the nerve roots and where they come out of the spine and things like that. So you use them for different reasons, but they each have their own problems. I'm not totally sure what the side effects are from magnetic resonance imaging. It's certainly not ionizing radiation. You can't have anything metal on you, you know. You can't be wearing it, or you can't have it inside. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have certain wires and pacemakers and things like that, you cannot have it done. The strength of that magnet, if you will, is significant, measured in degrees called Teslas. And those things are pretty powerful. You have to be very careful. If you ever go to an MRI facility, they usually have it marked out as you're, say, sitting in the waiting room. They'll say this is zone one. If you're kind of like in a closer waiting room, it's zone two. And if you're in another one, it's zone three. And those have meaning because that's how close you're getting to the magnetic force and what you shouldn't be doing there if you are.
It's just that I'm sure there are some people thinking, well, why wouldn't we use one or the other? But a CAT scan would be able to tell certain things that an MRI would not, and vice versa?
Yes, that's true. You'll see the same structures, but you'll see them in different ways. And an MRI is not generally something we want to see in a skeletal study, perhaps. But a CAT scan is effective, but less so when we're looking at, say, a big soft tissue area like the brain.
Okay. Yeah. So because I'm thinking on the bronchiectasis, maybe this is something that you started to talk about, whether it was something you could diagnose. Is it easier to diagnose that with a CAT scan versus an MRI?
It's easier to diagnose it with a CAT scan. And we see, and CAT scans are done much more often than MRIs, generally speaking. And so we pick it up fairly often.
On Talk Radio 98.5 and 1240 WRTA, it's The Buzz with Dr. Z, Dr. George Lupko. I'm Doug Herendeen. We're talking about bronchiectasis, and we've talked about how it may be difficult to diagnose. Maybe a CAT scan is better than an MRI for that, and exactly what it is about a chronic lung disease, and where do we go from here, sir?
Well, just to get an idea of who gets this problem, and how much of it we see. As I said, because we're doing more CAT scans now of the chest than ever before, because we're screening for a whole lot of other diseases, and it's such a great imaging technique that it's used for just about, you know, if you go into the emergency room and you say, well, I've got this pain here in my chest, along with your EKG and everything else, that you're going to get a CAT scan somewhere along the way.
X-rays are cumulative over a lifetime, the radiation is, right?
Yes, they can be.
But it shows you that this is that good of a diagnostic tool that you will use it to a certain extent.
Absolutely. Oh, I wouldn't hesitate to get one or to order one for somebody. But just so you know, there's nothing, Doug, that we can do to you in medicine that doesn't have a side effect or a complication. There just isn't.
Especially on all those commercials you were talking about at the beginning of the show.
That's right. Well, it's interesting. Again, I get into the bronchiectasis thing, but when you listen to those commercials and they talk about the medication, have you heard the rapid fire, the side effects that can occur?
I sit there and listen and think, why would you ask your doctor about this? I'd run in the opposite direction for 99% of them.
Yeah, it's true. And for those patients who and folks out there who wouldn't take a medication because they hear all those things, here's what I want to tell you, that when these drugs are approved, there are studies that are done to see what side effects may have occurred, and they don't necessarily need to be cause and effect for them to have to mention it. They just have to have occurred. So
it could have been coincidence.
It could have been coincidence, you know. And so none of those things have to happen to you. Usually the ones that are concerning are ones that happen 10% or more of the times, 10% or more of the patients. When they're down in that 1% range, they don't tell you what they are. Mm-hmm. Some of them also are just common things that happen, you know, nausea, you know, upset stomach, you know, this kind of stuff. Those are things that can happen with anything. I suppose if you got two people got hit by a bus, they would say that traffic accidents are a part of the side effect of whatever it is. So yeah. This is the kind of information you're getting.
You can take
there.
Anything to extremes.
Exactly.
Okay.
So let me get back to bronchiectasis now. So who gets it? Who are the people who get it? Well, because it's a process that destroys the airway, it takes a while to do that. Now, it can happen suddenly, but generally speaking, it occurs over a longer period of time, and therefore, we see the problem primarily in older patients. Now, I'm going to make a distinction here about what we're talking about. Bronchiectasis occurs often and frequently in patients who have cystic fibrosis. Mm. Cystic fibrosis is primarily a pediatric disease, although we're seeing people live longer now with it. But it's not in my area of expertise. And so when we talk about bronchiectasis, and this is in medicine in general, we talk about non-cystic bronchiectasis or bronchiectasis associated with cystic fibrosis. There's two varieties. The one with cystic fibrosis is, of course, caused by that disease, and that disease essentially exclusively. And it has its own character and its own prognosis and its own trouble. Very similar to patients who get this who do not have cystic fibrosis. But nonetheless, when you're talking with a cystic fibrotic patient, you're talking about someone who has not just bronchiectasis, but he has a systemic, genetically caused disease. And so that's a separate discussion entirely. So what we're talking about today is bronchiectasis in non-cystic fibrotic patients, non-cystic fibrosis. It occurs in about, well, they say about 500,000 people in the United States, but I'm sure it's more because it's a diagnosis that we don't always think about. Patients have, as I said, when I go to the symptoms, you'll see the symptoms are common symptoms. And we may not, if they don't get a CT scan of the chest or someone's actually looking for it, they may not make the diagnosis. So it's older patients, generally speaking. We're talking about older patients being more than 60 years old, certainly greater than 75 years old. These are the patients who tend to have it. And you're saying, well, those guys are ready for the bone heap anyway. Why would we bother to diagnose their problem? But
hey, eventually we're all going to resemble that remark.
That's right. It really is important because the symptoms can be significant. So that's kind of what we're dealing with here.
Quick question.
Yeah.
Is it the fact that they are older, that they're more susceptible, or that it takes that long to get to them, thus it's more likely somebody who's older has it?
It's because in the most common cases, we'll talk about who gets it in a minute here, the etiology and causes, but it's generally from something that's been going on for a while that ends up creating it. And you'll see what I'm talking about in just a bit. So what are the causes of this particular disease? Well, to be honest with you, in about 40% of the cases that we see, we don't know why. We never discover why. And that's not...
You just recognize it, you diagnose it, but you...
You go to the history and such. For example, a very common cause of this is what we call a post-infectious cause. If someone has a prior bacterial pneumonia, I'm talking about bacterial pneumonia now, that pneumonia may have been so severe that it damaged the airways, and they become what we call bronchiectatic. They become flabby and lose their integrity, and then it worsens over time. So you go back in history and you say, did you ever have a pneumonia? And, oh, yes, doctor, I had pneumonia. I was in the hospital. They took care of me, whatever it is. Mm. So pneumonias. Tuberculosis was a very common and is a very common cause of bronchiectasis or results in bronchiectasis. But we don't see that as much in the United States, although recently there was a case that I was involved in not nearby. I was out in San Antonio, but it was a patient who had tuberculosis. And so tuberculosis is around. It is certainly around in the third world. And depending on where you might be, it may be there. The other situation that just most recently we've experienced is COVID. Some patients who had COVID, you know, their lungs were affected severely. Lungs, heart, and brain were the biggest organs to be affected by COVID. And the damage that it caused to the integrity of their airways was significant. And some of these patients resulted in having, again, this destruction of their airways. And it was one of the more commonly seen consequences of severe COVID infections.
Is this part of long COVID that we are just determining now, or is this something that would be there no matter what had been causing it? In other words, it wasn't necessarily the COVID, it's the after effects.
No, I think that you would you could call this a sequelae, a complication of it. Long COVID is almost more of a neurologic type of problem. Patients don't feel well. They don't know why. You know, there's malaise. There's other symptoms that are basically confusing and aren't very specific. So that's what really we're talking about with long COVID. If we're talking about some of the damage was done to the heart, some of the damage was done to the lungs, those types of things, those are the kinds of consequences that can occur from any inflammatory process, any illness like that, you know. So there are other types of, I just mentioned tuberculosis. There are other types of more common tuberculosis, so-called non-tuberculous mycobacteria. Mycobacterium is the genus of the tuberculous organ, Mycobacterium tuberculosis, okay?
All right.
Well, there are other mycobacterium like TB, but not TB, okay, that affect the lung. And we actually see those in the United States probably more commonly than we see good old-fashioned tuberculosis. Those infections, again, are chronic and some of them indolent and go on for years and result in destruction of the airways in the lung areas where they're involved. Now, there's some other diseases, if you will, that are genetically related, and they involve our immune system. There's something called common variable immunodeficiency. And what is this? This is a genetic disease process where your body's immune cells don't produce the proper amount of antibodies. And so you are subject to various infections. Now, this is a genetic one. There's one that you can acquire. It's HIV. Okay, HIV is another type of disease process where your body does not produce the appropriate amount of immunologic proteins that we have.
Yeah. Antibodies or whatever.
Antibodies. Yeah, the antibodies that we're concerned about go by the moniker of GAME. They're G-A-M-N-E. Okay?
Okay.
So those are the four antibodies that we have primarily. And if you have so-called common variable immunodeficiency, you may have very low volumes of one or all of them. And depending on which one it is, they function somewhat differently in different circumstances, then you could be subjected to a serious infections which would lead to bronchiectasis.
It's The Buzz with Dr. Z. That's Dr. George Luckow. I'm Doug Herendeen from WRTA. Before we continue on about bronchiectasis, we want to talk about the Black Lung Center that you guys have and who that affects and who that can help. And how to get in touch with them, right?
Yeah, Doug. The thanks for mentioning it here. The Lung Disease Foundation of Central Pennsylvania, which is housed in the Lung Disease Center of Central Pennsylvania on Chestnut Avenue there, 800 Chestnut Avenue, we have a grant from the Department of Labor, which actually, despite all that's going on, was funded again this year, or actually for a five-year cycle. And we're licensed, if you will, to provide services in actually 47 counties of Pennsylvania. We don't because some of them don't have very many people or don't have any coal miners. This is a program for previous or current coal miners. And as you know, exposure to coal dust over an extended period of time can create a certain amount of lung injury and lung damage, so-called black lung disease, coal workers' pneumoconiosis. Those are the terms we use. Well, patients can come to our clinic and be evaluated for this. They get a chest X-ray, which then is read by a certified radiologist who has been specially trained to look for evidence for coal dust deposition in the lung. You get a pulmonary function study, a breathing test, which will demonstrate whether or not you have any reduced airflow through your airways. There's a blood gas test, which is, we've talked about that before. It's a test where we measure the actual oxygen level in your blood. We do it both with at rest and then with activity. We get you to walk on the treadmill a little bit and see if it goes down. And last but not least, we get an EKG. And the EKG is read, and then if there are any problems with any of these studies, two things can happen. Number one is you can be sent to special attorneys who will help you file your claim, and also the folks in our office know what to do and how to give you that advice. And secondly, we send this information to your family doctor or any other doctor you want us to. So if there's some problem that we recognize, you're able to get some help with that if you so desire. You also talk to me or another doctor there in the clinic, one of our other doctors at the Altoona Lung Specialists, and we will go over your study with you, tell you what the studies showed, what they mean, and we do fill out a form for you that goes to the Department of Labor, which lets them know as well. And so it's a nice little service, and it's free. You just have to call. You have to set up an appointment so that we know you're coming. You can call the clinic at 814-800-2309. That's 814-800-2309. And the secretary will be more than happy to sign you up and have you come in. You got to answer some questions. There's some forms. You know, this is a government thing, so there's all kinds of information we want, mostly about your health. It's about, you know, what kind of symptoms you have and other problems you've had and medications you take, those types of things. And then you get the evaluation. You come in, talk to me about it or talk to one of the other doctors about it. And we can, like I say, send it to anybody that you'd like. If we find something wrong, we can tell you what that is or what it could be and give you some advice, you know. So, and if you live at some distance, we even have a little bit of funds that we could pay for your travel expense.
Yeah, I was going to say, because some people may hesitate to contact you for that reason alone.
No, if you let us know, there's a travel voucher that we fill out, and we'll give you some money for your travel expense. I don't think it pays for lunch or anything, but it'll pay for your gas, and that's a significant expense right now.
I would say so,
and may continue to be. So we can do that. So if you're interested, if you are a coal miner, have been a coal miner, and by the way, if nothing's really found, or we find that things are really pretty good, or you have some findings, but not enough to really warrant a claim or anything, you can come back. You can come back in a year or two, be evaluated again. There's no reason why you can't do that.
If something is going to be a problem, it's rarely going to just go away. It was going to be a problem anyway, and you may see it coming, but this way you can verify it later if you have.
Yeah, and black lung disease is a progressive disease, even if you no longer have the exposure to the coal dust and everything. Plus, many of the patients will have combination problems because the coal seams that we're working with now are smaller and they're surrounded by rock. And so a lot of the drilling and a lot of the mining also stirs up rock dust, which contains silica. And so a lot of these patients have silica exposure.
Just what you don't need in your lungs.
No, we don't need that either.
Yeah.
So there, it's a good thing to do. And again, it's free. So call the office, 814-800-2309, and talk to the secretary and get yourself scheduled for an appointment.
Okay, so that's something to keep in mind. And also, on the podcast page of this program, we will have that information, the links and the phone number. And the least you can do, just call, ask. You don't get the information if you don't ask. So it may help you. Moving on, bronchiectasis. This is what we were talking about today on The Buzz with Dr. Z.
Yeah, we're talking about this disease process that's triggered by some type of inflammation. Can be from infection, can be from genetic diseases, et cetera. And One of the more common things that we see in patients who have this problem is a history of gastroesophageal reflux, so-called GERD.
Yeah, which more than a few people have.
Well, that's true. And if you have enough of it, and if you have it long enough and severe enough, it can lead to bronchiectasis. And actually, well, I said we don't know in maybe 40% of the cases what causes this, but a lot of the patients have a history of GERD. And so we suspect that to be a significant contributing factor anyway. So here we are. We've got patients now who have this problem. We've diagnosed it through CAT scanning. Why did we get the CAT scan done? Well, because they may have one of these predisposing conditions that we just talked about. But then they have symptoms. Okay, what are the symptoms? Well, the symptoms are those that you might expect from the lung. I mean, one of the things you need to understand is any organ, any end organ, the lung, the brain, the liver, they only have so many ways of responding to an insult. In other words, your heart, for example.
A heart attack is an insult.
Yeah. What happens?
The way you're using it.
What happens to your heart when it's damaged? Well, it dilates and then it fails. That's what it does. When your liver is insulted, okay, it gets inflamed, it scars, you get cirrhotic, and you're in trouble there, okay? Well, it's the same way with the lungs. There's inflammation, there's damage done, scarring occurs, anatomic distortion occurs, and then you have this problem. So, and the symptoms are very much the same as any other problem that you might have with the lung. You're going to get cough, right? As a matter of fact, one of the things I usually tell patients, or I did tell patients early on, was that if you're in this office and you don't either have wheezing, coughing, or shortness of breath, you're in the wrong office.
Mm-hmm.
Because those are the hallmarks of some type of lung problem. So cough is one. You may get some wheezing. You're going to have mucus production. As a matter of fact, mucus production is one of the biggest symptoms that these patients have, and the biggest one that we have to attack when we're trying to give them some relief. And I'll talk about that when we talk about treatment, et cetera. So we have a patient now who comes to us with, I have this chronic cough, doc. I'm coughing all the time. Maybe I'm coughing at night. Maybe you have GERD. Maybe you have reflux, things like that. I had a pneumonia. So you put this all together. You get a CAT scan of the chest. It shows evidence of dilated airways consistent with bronchiectasis. And you then may study them to see if they have any of these other problems. We talked about immunodeficiencies and things like that. But there's one other condition, I guess, that's associated with this that most people have never heard of. But it's a fungus infection. It's a fungus infection with something called aspergillus. And it's called bronchopulmonary aspergillosis, or allergic bronchopulmonary aspergillosis. And it's an infection where the fungus, the aspergillus fungus, kind of lives commensally in the airway. It's not in the lung tissue, but it's in the airway itself.
But it's inside you.
It's inside you, and it's in the airway itself. And it is one of the things that we think about when patients have asthma, because asthma patients not unoftentimes, will get something like this. And so we think about it. If they have symptoms of their asthma and we never seem to be able to control it, do they have this infection going? So that's just another one. Just to kind of fill out, you know, all the little pages here about what could be causing the trouble. So when we finally find out that this patient has bronchiectasis, they're going to say, well, what are you going to do for me, doc? And remember I told you that the reason I picked this topic was because I was looking at commercials on television, and they were talking about
the Ask Your Doctor commercials.
The Ask Your Doctor commercial. They're talking about diseases that no one knows what they are. Maybe they're rare, you know, but now they have a medicine, so they're going to tell you about it. And patients are wondering, well, do I have it? Should I get this medicine? Should I ask my doctor about it? Because I have cough, and I have some mucus production, and I notice myself wheezing once in a while. I must have bronchiectasis. Chances are you don't, but that I must have that, you know.
Yeah. Well, if you watch some of these things, you become a hypochondriac, because they eventually they will describe enough things that it fits almost everybody.
Well, that's right. So these are common symptoms. If you have it, maybe you have bronchiectasis, maybe you don't. But if we make the diagnosis, then we want to talk to you about some treatments. And again, in this particular case, one of the treatments that triggered me to do this particular talk is one that is unheard of by most people, but also is a very complicated medication and a complicated process of how it works. And I know that the commercial is only telling you or trying to tell you about bronchiectasis, because if they try to tell you about their drug, you just wouldn't understand any of it.
It's The Buzz with Dr. Z, Dr. George Lupko. We're talking about bronchiectasis, which can have several types: cylindrical, varicose, cystic, traction, focal, diffuse. Some of the symptoms: cough with lots of mucus and pus, repeated colds, bad smelling mucus, shortness of breath, wheezing, coughing up blood. This is not just a simple cough, just so you understand.
That's correct, Doug. You've kind of run down a litany of it. I was going to spare the folks out there all that, but
just as a recap.
There you go. That's fine. So let's assume for the moment that you have bronchiectasis. We've made the diagnosis. And you're going to say, well, okay, what can you do for me?
What treatment? Yeah.
Yeah, what's the treatment? Give me the magic pill that's going to take this all away. Well, to begin with, there is no magic pill, because this is, although there is an immunologic component to it, it's basically an anatomic disease. You can't give somebody a pill to make their legs straight. You know, that's not the way it works. So what are the first things that we try and do to help patients? Well, as you know, as we mentioned, the symptoms are cough and mucus production. And usually the mucus production is pretty intense for many of these patients, particularly if they have a significant degree of bronchiectasis. And they're always coughing. And when they cough, you really think that you're going to probably see their socks in the mucus. You know what I mean? It's a deep cough.
This is something that's going to be far worse than I don't want to mention a brand name here, but there's a certain medication that you take over the counter that's supposed to get rid of the mucus. And this probably is not going to do very much to put a dent in this.
There's no treatment that gets rid of the mucus. The mucus is your response to, in this case, inflammation and infection. In fact, in patients with bronchiectasis, our plan is to clear the mucus, not stop it, because the mucus contains certain amounts of protective elements that envelop bacteria, envelop viruses, things like that.
So, and it's getting stuff out of your system.
It is. And so for most of us, when we have a cold and we have cough and mucus production, we don't want to stop that. People say, give me something to dry me up. Well, we don't want to dry you up. We actually want that you to drink a little bit more water so that your mucus is a little looser, and we want you to clear it. It's really part of your immune system clearing the infection that you have. So in any event, so that's the first thing we do. We look for some airway clearance techniques. What are they? What are airway clearance techniques? Well, first thing is we can get the patient to understand that if they roll around a little bit, say on the bed or on the floor, and change side to side and then cough, just the gravity will drain the mucus from a particular area. So positional techniques are important.
I'm guessing that you're not going to feel like moving around if you have this bad enough.
Well, you don't feel like moving around a lot, but it's one of the things you can do. You can lay in bed. Just change your position a bit. It changes the angle at which the airways are draining.
The more you move, the more it will help you.
It will. In the old days, when we didn't have some of the fancy devices that we do now, there was something called cupping, which was what we did was you hold your hands kind of like two cups, right? Mm-hmm. And you beat on the patient. You beat on their back. And you have them change positions, and you beat on them, you know, with your cupped hands. And that vibration tends to move the mucus out of these airways to centrally so that you can cough it out. Now, we don't use that as much. That's an old-timer's technique, I suppose.
Yeah.
Now we have more technical things. We have these vibrating vests. They go by a variety of names. There are quite a number of them on the market. And the patient puts it on, and it vibrates. And that vibration does the same thing as the cupping, and we get them to change positions, and it tends to move the mucus centrally to the central airways and allows them to cough it and expel it. Some patients have some complicating underlying lung disease, such as COPD. They can have COPD and bronchiectasis. Makes it hard for them to cough. They can't have an effective cough because they don't have much air power, if you will.
Yeah, having one is bad enough.
And so one of the things we do is we give them a nebulizer therapy, but not with medications, but with something called hypertonic saline. Saline that has more salt in it than your body has in your plasma, okay? It's called hypertonic saline. And that is a slight irritant, okay? And it promotes the cough and promotes clearing of these secretions. There are some other things that have been used, some other products, but nothing seems to make too much difference. So the airway clearance technique, so it's clearing the secretions, staying hydrated, maybe using a vibrating vest, maybe taking some saline. Are there any mucoactive agents? You know, said take this medication to either get your mucus out, relieve the mucus, etc. If you look carefully at the bottles of this stuff, it says drink with a lot of water, you know, or drink with 2 glasses of water.
So you don't dehydrate yourself?
That's the active ingredient, really, the water, okay?
Oh.
It keeps the mucus that you have is contained in 2 phases, a sol gel phase, and the more sol you have, the looser it is, and the more gel you have, the thicker it is. So
yeah,
doing that. Then there are some other general measures that you can use, and that's trying to protect yourself from infection, right? Vaccinations, staying away from people who are sick. You know, if you're an oldster but you have little grandchildren and such, those are germ factories. They're going to bring home everything from daycare or school. And so you have to be careful of this, because when you get a more serious infection or a worsening of your condition, an exacerbation, which you can get with this, you have some standard cough, you're always coughing, you get infected, you're coughing more, that irritation is more severe, those airways are already inflamed, if you will, and they bleed easily.
Mm.
They bleed easily. Many of the patients, since they're older patients, are on medications such as Eliquis or Xarelto, which are anticoagulants. They reduce the body's ability to clot. So you start bleeding from your hemoptysis. You know, you're starting to have hemoptysis from your bronchiectasis. You're going to be in deep goo.
Yeah, I guess.
You know, so this is very common. And back in the day, I would see a lot of patients with bronchiectasis who had hemoptysis, blood in their sputum. So it was really, really substantial. So you want to not get infected. Now, along the lines of what we were talking about earlier,
yeah.
The reason I got onto this is because there's a commercial for bronchiectasis on television. And I'm not against this product. As a matter of fact, I think the product does help patients, like many products do. They help patients. But they don't mention it because it's so complicated. That I don't think they explain bronchiectasis very well, but they certainly wouldn't be able to explain this. It's something called a DPPI inhibitor. It reduces some of these enzymes and proteases that cause the inflammation in the airways, and it does help some patients. So anyway, to put a final cap on what we're talking about today, that's how I got to this. I'm not going to say anything more about this particular product. I'm not doing a commercial for them, but it's complicated. Ask your doctor, right?
It is really the case where you finally do have to ask your doctor for a very good reason on it.
Yeah.
Dr. George Lupko, again, thank you very much. If you want some more information on the Black Lung Clinic, we've got the information on the podcast page. It's coming up on WRTA.com, and we'll be back the third Tuesday at 2 next month on WRTA. Dr. Lupko, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Doug.